When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Ah. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
History in 5 songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Hello, once again. Welcome back to another episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcasts. We are pleased, as always, to be part of this fast and always expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, and over 40 other podcast platforms. All right, this is episode 216. I'm calling this Finding Value in Instrumentals. I wanted to put a positive twist on that because I've been known to rail against instrumentals. I'm still not a big instrumental fan, but I found a lot of good stuff to talk about here and good points to make, and splitting it up into categories and all that kind of fun stuff that we usually do. I want to thank William Walker and McPhelan for some ideas here and some examples that I never would have thought of, which we'll rattle off as we go along. But the idea here is that instrumentals, an interesting thing. Going back to my youth and me and my buddies and our song rating system of lousy, average, and really goods, and so-sos and lousies, and then mathematically you could come up with exactly what the rating of an album is, and everybody more or less agreed. It's a long, long story. Maybe I should do an entire episode on that at some point. It's pretty crazy because I can remember probably dozens and dozens, if not a couple of hundred, of actual exact 7 out of 9s, 3 out of 5s, 3 out of 10s, all that sort of stuff, right? But the reason I bring this up is because instrumentals were always basically called so-sos. Instrumentals could never rise to the level of a good. So we had basically 3 categories: lousy, so-sos, and good. So-sos canceled out, so you could take a 9-track album and it could come out to 4 out of 7. But basically, instrumentals could never rise above a so-so because we always considered them lesser songs, unfinished songs. Obviously, they are finished, but they always just seemed like that sort of thing where you never felt that. My computer keeps freezing up here, and you're wondering if it's recording, kind of thing. But I'm pretty sure we're fine. So the idea is finding value in instrumentals, finding different kinds of instrumentals I like. You know, what makes a good idea of putting an instrumental on an album, sort of thing. Conceptually, there's something that breaks up the album, provides contrast, maybe even elevates in importance the album. It's like saying, well, we're giving you an extra kind of animal on here. It also makes you focus over to the, away from the vocals and onto the instruments, like they're making a statement here that we are musicians. You know, I remember, I've brought this up before, but I remember having a discussion with Richie Blackmore once, and he kind of joked. He goes, fancy that, instrumental music. Like, we were talking about debating the value of instrumental music. And And he says, music, instrumental music, instruments. You know, it's like he was making the point that, you know, well, what's wrong with instrumental music? What's wrong with not having a vocalist on there? Obviously, he's had his issues with vocalists. But if you think back to, you know, almost all classical and almost all jazz is instrumental music. So, you know, the idea of having instrumentals, you know, should be more normal than it is. But in our world, in our classic rock world, obviously, the instrumental is sort of an occasionally thing. Mick Phelan writes, I think I like instrumentals. They add a different flavor to an album, a new shade, nuance. They aren't just filler. They are powerful, often valuable interludes. I really have fallen for Tejas. Yeah, this one I actually removed from here because I wanted to replace it with something I felt more passionate about. But I always think of ZZ Top Asleep in the Desert as a really cool, mellow instrumental that I really like. But anyways, Mick writes, I really have fallen for Tejas after hearing your passion for it. The album has raunch and swagger, but the instrumental gives beautiful serenity. Sometimes unaccompanied instruments can do it. It's a side to ZZ Top the average listener never knew they had. Does it add something serious? It certainly impressed me. I love it. He says instrumentals add a kooky getaway. I love Los Endos and the Brazilian by Genesis for the novel quality. Sacred Reich have If Only, a beautiful turn that surprised me. Crystal Land, 1985, or Breathing Spaces. They provide a breather, and when the threat intensity arises, is even heavier. Yeah, it's a good point. So the idea that, you know, like Led Zeppelin always talked about light and shade. Well, instrumentals, an even more shady version of shade, especially if there's no singing on it, especially if it's just maybe some acoustic guitar or whatever. That's going to be a category as we go on. William Walker says, I love instrumental rock, jazz, and metal, but one of the major problems with it centers around a lack of that dark and light contrast provided by a vocalist and his lyrics. Just has been noted, a band in one of their heavier songs will be and appear heavier in the wake of a mellow ballad. That's what we just said. So is a mellotron solo or guitar solo more exciting in the wake of vocals? Vocals are in one sense the most separate aspect of a band. Yeah, so he goes on, you know, and I believe this too. You know how much I care about lyrics, and lyrics are super important, and what I just said about an instrumental not rising above the level of so-so. But let's move into our first selection here, and we shall discuss further. Like I say, I've got some categories. Take a listen to this. This is Def Leppard with Switch 625. All right, so the theme here is these types of instrumentals that I surprised myself in, you know, like I say, we're calling this finding value in instrumentals, and I've always found value in this great high and dry instrumental. I really like the way that it does add sort of an extra layer of regalness, royalty to this album. It just makes the band sort of sound more important, and what I like about this particular type of instrumental is it sounds like a song that was made just slightly too good, too elevated, too much going on, that the vocals would be over the top. So this idea of a really good riff, they've got lead guitars going in there that could stand for a vocal melody, although it doesn't quite feel like a verse in here. It feels more like an outro break section, like a really kind of new piece of music that comes in on a cool epic sort of song. But I love that idea that essentially it's most of the way there. It's rocking, it's got a beat, it's got a riff, it's got a lead guitar essentially standing in for Joe Elliott here. And you've basically got almost a full song. Another one that's very similar to that is Riot Narita. And it's kind of interesting that Riot Narita is 1979, and it's a good action-packed song instrumental like this Switch 625. And then Rush has one of the most famous instrumentals of all time, YYZ, which is also the name of an airport, which is kind of neat, right? So I wonder if Rush got the idea for YYZ from Riot and Narita. It's kind of possible, right? And then Switch 625 sounds like you're switching gates at the airport, right? YYZ doesn't fit in this category other than the airport thing, but I wanted to mention that one there. And another interesting thing, I almost made this a whole category, but another interesting thing about Switch 625 is late in the sequence, you do get the ah-ah section, right? So is it strictly an instrumental? But there's no words, so you could say that the voice is being used as an instrument, and it is kind of an instrument, right? So that's kind of cool. You've got a little bit of that. I'm going to be mentioning a few of those as we go along. Actually, the Police Regatta de Blanc is kind of like that. I believe that's the one, right? With the AOs. Other ones that feel in this category of just almost songs anyways is like Pat Travers' band Hammerhead, which is one of the early examples of double bass. We had that in our double bass episode. Scorpions' Coast to Coast is a good hooky one where you can imagine, with a vocal on that, with a bit of a rearrangement, that could have been a hit because it is a really catchy sort of melody that they've got on that, on Love Drive. Aerosmith, the movie, Metallica's got a couple of amazing ones here. I believe it's Mick Phelan who loves Orion. But basically Orion and the Call of Cthulhu are big, epic, excellent instrumentals. And they actually fall between our first category and our third category, which is more like the prog epic thing, like really sort of stepping out. Metallica's not really doing that here. Metallica are masters of songwriting, so these are just great, great. They're almost like you could hear themselves in their head challenging themselves to say, we hate instrumentals too, let's make one that's actually really good. And they write essentially really good songs for these instrumentals. Iron Maiden, Lost for Words, I don't know if that's so good. Deep Purple, I don't think, does particularly good instrumentals. We got Ring That Neck, we got that B-side, Corioneros Redig. Michael Schenker Group, Ulcer on Assault Attack, Into the Arena on the first one. So they're kind of this way as well, that they could write, a good knees up, as they say in England, sort of instrumental that's kind of a song. William Walker also mentions Greg Howe, Garden of Harmony, Marty Friedman, Dragon Mistress, Steve Vai, The Animal, Tony McAlpine, Peruvian Lower Layback, Vandenberg Kamikaze, Yngwie Malmsteen, Black Star, Far Beyond the Sun, Eclipse, Amber Dawn, greatest instrumental of all time. He says this is the greatest instrumental of all time. Ronnie Montrose Mach 1, noting whether mellow instrumentals are powerful, heavy. Okay, it goes on here. So there you go. That's our first category. Almost songs, good entertaining instrumentals. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back. All right, back again here on History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, episode 216, Finding Value in Instrumentals. Good positive title there, right? Take a listen to this and we shall discuss. This is Eno with Somber Reptiles. All right, so this is the one I kicked out ZZ Top Asleep in the Desert for, which, by the way, I learned on acoustic guitar. I love that song so much. Just a little more about Asleep in the Desert. So that's on Tejas, 1976, November, I believe. But it's beautiful acoustic guitar. It's got, if he's playing brushes, it's a very pronounced and consistent brush whack. I don't know if that's an actual brush, but then you hear in some of the soft, snary sort of fills, it sounds a little bit like brushes there. And it's also got a really interesting bass drum click that sounds a little bit like a metronome, but it also sounds like a bass drum click. And Billy Gibbons, not only is he playing this beautiful Spanish guitar acoustic, but there's slide in there as well. So that's a really cool one. But I kicked it out for Eno, Somber Reptiles. I love this album to death. Check this album out. Eno, Another Green World. All of Eno's albums that are the ones with vocals on them are some of my favorite albums of all time. You got Taking Tiger Mountain, by Strategy, is that what it's called? And Before and After Science and Another Green World. Love those records so much, those early Enos. But this is off of Another Green World, which also has really cool, haunting, mellow instrumentals in the title track. In Dark Trees, even scarier. Little Fishes, Be Calmed, really good stuff. And I almost got an extra theme here. I mean, this theme was essentially just really good, kind of mellow, cool, spacey, dreamy ones. This whole sort of category or subcategory where you've got Eno, Peter Gabriel with something like Start, which has the sax solo in it, which is kind of an interesting thing you hear in this sort of family, the family that includes Robert Fripp and David Bowie. So David Bowie has sax solo as well in Subterranean. Low, you know, that all those beautiful, beautiful instrumentals on Low, Warsaw, Art Decade, Weeping Wall, Speed of Life. So the David Bowie instrumentals are adjacent to the Eno instrumentals for obvious reason, and they are adjacent to the Robert Fripp solos for obvious reason. So Robert Fripp shows up. Did I say solos? Instrumentals, I meant, right? You know, the cool thing about Robert Fripp is he has that beautiful, beautiful sort of snaky guitar, Frippertronic sort of sound that he is applied to Eno and David Bowie and Peter Gabriel instrumentals, or if not full instrumentals, always instrumental passages. And you also hear that even on Robert Fripp solo albums. You know, there's a lot of Robert Fripp solo stuff, but even on the absolute classic Exposure. And then there's also a lot of amazing King Crimson instrumental stuff, which actually is not really in this family. It's a little bit different, but Lark's Tongue and Aspic and that sort of things. You know, and a lot of instrumental stuff on Three of a Perfect Pair, of course, as well. So yeah, this is almost a sub theme in itself, but I love this gorgeous, mellow kind of stuff as well. And another one that I've always loved is Jerry Garcia Band, Down Home from Cats Under the Stars, which has that cheat in it, the cheat of the vocals. This one has actually a lot of vocals, but it's vocals as instrument. It's not lyrics. Another classic in that department is Clare Torrey on Great Gig in the Sky on Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. You know, I have a Dark Side of the Moon book that I can supply, brand new that I have come out, came out in slipcase and all that, big coffee table book, martinpopoff.com. But yeah, that's probably the most famous one like this. And another amazing, goofy one that I just love to death is Touching Tongues on Vi's Sex and Religion. That is such a beautiful instrumental period because of what Steve Vai does on it. It's kind of a mellow balladic type instrumental, but late in the sequence Devin Townsend comes in. So Devin's on this album, which is kind of cool, but he comes in and he does a wordless vocal, which is more than voice as an instrument. It's almost like voice as an instrument. The challenge is not to have any words, and he does something that sounds like words, which is kind of cool. Another one that fits absolutely every time I think of Asleep in the Desert, I think of Thin Lizzy Banshee, which I love to death as well on the Nightlife album. Nightlife, I think so. Really cool sort of, and it sounds like Asleep in the Desert. It sounds like a Tex-Mex desert sort of a song, which is kind of cool. William Walker on the Mellow Ones mentions, Alan Holdsworth, Tokyo Dreams, Electric Sun, Winter Days, Eric Johnson, Trademark in Manhattan, Gary Moore, Dunlucci, George Lynch, I Will Remember, Jeff Beck, Cause We've Ended as Lovers and Where Were You, Paul Kossoff, Time Away, Santana, Europa, Joe Satriani, Love Thing, Until We Say Goodbye, You Saved My Life, Bamboo, and Revelation, Michelangelo Battio, Peace and Two Times Again, Rainbow Snowman. Yeah, that's an interesting one, William. Yeah, you know, that's one I always quite liked, and I like the placement. He's also got Difficult to Cure. He's got a few instrumentals here and there. I'm not really a big fan, but Snowman even won some awards, I believe, in the UK. Steve Vai, Tender Surrender, Whispering of Prayer, and Lotus Feet are all great mellowish instrumentals. Some of them are more power ballad than completely mellow, but oh well. Okay, let's move on to our next selection here. This is Rush with Leave That Thing Alone. Thank you. Okay, so the theme here is the instrumentals that are the big prog monsters. But I wanted to make it a little bit of a twist. I didn't want to play La Villa Strangiata or YYZ. But Rush has 8 instrumentals in total, and I like this one quite a lot. This is from Counterparts, October 1993. This went gold. I think is a better version than Where's My Thing? From Roll the Bones, but it's kind of a follow-up to that. You can tell by the title. And it also has the same sort of, funkiness to it. But what I like about this is it is a really catchy instrumental. You get sort of swept up by the infectiousness of the funkiness of it, the bass line, the drums, the hooks, the melody to it. So I really wanted to reward putting Rush in here with something a little bit less than obvious. But I think that's a really good one. I saw a ranking by someone named Drew on the internet that he ranked. So in reverse order of the 8 instrumentals, he put Limbo from Tests for Echo last, Hope, Snakes and Arrows, Malignant, Narcissism, Snakes and Arrows, Leave That Thing Alone, Counterparts, the one I just played, Where's My Thing, Roll the Bones, YYZ, Moving Pictures, and La Villa Strangiato Hemispheres as 3 and 2. And then he made the bold move, The Main Monkey Business from Snakes and Arrows as the number one, which is a really good one. It's got heaviness, got a lot of variety to it. They throw a lot of stuff in there. It's a little bit like a throwback to the earlier ones, but it's kind of interesting. Snakes and Arrows is the only album with multiple instrumentals on it from Rush, and it's got 3, which is pretty crazy. But King Crimson's got Red, which I feel is in this category. And I think you could even put Frank Zappa in this category with Peaches on Regalia. I really like another cool thing about that one. That reminds me of Leave That Thing Alone in a way, in that it is effortlessly enjoyable and you can remember that melody that goes along with it, even though it's, highfalutin Frank Zappa jazz music, with all that stuff. But here he goes and makes a completely enjoyable, effortlessly enjoyable by the layman sort of instrumental. You want to throw Focus Hocus Pocus in here, you can as well, which is another cheat one as well, because it has voice as an instrument with all that crazy yodeling. The Who, Quadrophenia, The Who are kind of known for because they're writing these rock operas, these suites, these concept albums. That's another place where you get a lot of instrumentals. And they're really annoying, honestly, when you get them on these prog and concept albums, because, they often got like a parenthesis going and an intro and then the main thing. And I don't feel that the instrumentals on these concept albums are particularly well placed. I'm not happy that they're there, sort of thing. I like the other kind of instrumental as well. Commit to it, make a whole song, more or less. I think is kind of a cooler way to go. Okay, let's move on to our 4th selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Led Zeppelin with Moby Dick. Okay, so the theme here is spotlighting a member of the band. There are a lot of these out there in the world, of course. Most of the time, it is spotlighting the guitarist, because the guitarist is usually the chief songwriter. He's often the leader of the band. Usually the chief music writer. So there are a lot of guitar showcases. Witness the most famous instrumental of all time, probably in at least the guitar solo department, Van Halen Eruption. But you've got Cathedrals, you've got 1984. Cathedrals is focusing Eddie or showcasing Eddie as a guitar effects guy. 1984 is showcasing Eddie as a sort of synthesizer guy. Or is that David Lee Roth? I can't remember the story. Maybe David Lee Roth does that one. But Van Halen has a lot of these, Balachitherium or whatever it's called, showcasing, goofy drums. So Van Halen has a lot of these. Spanish Fly as a little intro, but that's our next category. Deep Purple on Burn, you have A200, which was almost like a give John Lord a song to showcase what he can do. And so he's like, over this sort of Ian Paice bolero beat, you've got this, showcasing the latest sort of technology synthesizer wise, on there. But yeah, Led Zeppelin, Moby Dick that we just played, is essentially a tribute to John Bonham, or a song, for John Bonham. So you've got essentially a mountain like boring. I think it's kind of a dull, crappy riff. I never liked Moby Dick, but you've got this sort of instrumental song going, and then everything falls away, and John Bonham does this big, massive, long drum solo, and then at the very end, the band comes back in just the sort of standard way. I never thought this was all that great a song. And then later on Coda, you get Bonzo's Mantra, right? Which is essentially a drum solo with some overdubs, I believe, on it, right? He's putting together a little bit of a composition there, I suppose. But yeah, in this, so you've got Metallica with Anesthesia Pulling Teeth, which is sort of a Cliff Burton showcase. Let's see, William Walker says, typically a live album track. Yeah, so he makes a point that quite often you'll get these named instrumentals, which are just, well, actually you get them often not named and the song just goes on forever, which is a known Deep Purple trope. But sometimes you will get a named instrumental on a live album, and then everybody gets all excited, ooh, an extra song, or but usually they telegraph that it's something like that, and usually you think it's going to be anyways. But yeah, he mentions that in the Eruption camp you've also got the famous George Lynch Mr. Scary Dawkins thing. I'm Addicted from LA Guns, Cocked and Loaded, trying intentionally to showcase a certain member usually means that the band was bored for me, and somebody felt they weren't getting enough solo time in all the other tracks. Yeah, good point. These types of songs, live or studio, tend to be just a few cool guitar solos bridged together by a riff, or quite simply just one cool long guitar solo. Same goes for keyboards and bass. That's all there most of the time, though. Solos with a lot of technique, the Courvoisier Concerto from One Night at Budokan at MSG. Is actually, so Michael Schenker Group's the only good freeform guitar solo I know. No repeated parts, that's a great melody and therefore a great song. One of the few instrumental solos I know that is also a great song. Yeah, a bunch of stuff William was saying is he's more or less in the same camp as me, that he's generally, arms crossed, prove to me that a solo has value. So that's why I wanted to call this Finding Value in Instrumentals, because most of the time I don't find value in instrumentals. Okay, let's move on to our fifth category, fifth selection, fifth and last theme here. This is Black Sabbath with Don't Start Too Late. Okay, the theme here is short intros, and I was listening to a bunch of these and thinking, I really like a lot of these. I really like what Tony Iommi does with these and Black Sabbath does with these, because I just love to death Don't Start Too Late. Of course, this is my favorite. I've often called this my favorite album of all time. It's usually up there with a couple of Cheats and some double albums in London Calling and Physical Graffiti, but I love Sabotage to death, and I just love Don't Start Too Late. It's so spooky and moody and ethereal and edgy, and just, trust Tony to come up with a really cool way to do Spanish guitar, more interesting than even Van Halen on Spanish Fly, right? And then, of course, the way, that absolutely monster heavy metal riff of Symptom of the Universe crunches in after this short song. I think it's only 45 seconds, I believe. Maybe it was this one, 45? Anyways, yeah, because I was worried about picking a clip that wasn't kind of the whole song. But yeah, love it. Don't like the title, Don't Start, parentheses, Too Late. That really annoys me. But yeah, there's a little story behind it. But I thought that was cool, and that made me think of the great intros on Master of Reality. I love Orchid and I love Embryo. Both of those are so cool. One's kind of like spooky classical music, and the other one is more like druggy, heroin, gauzy acoustic music, right? I mean, a little bit like Don't Start Too Late. They've got FX. You know, everybody kind of puts down FX, and I don't think it's that great either. Just the banging away thing sound with the echo. And what do you guys think of Breakout? I like Breakout on Never Say Die. I just think Never Say Die is just a hoot. I really like that. That Breakout, I think, is really cool. Jazzy, krautrock. It's their krautrock moment on there. Drums are huge on that song. So I think that's really cool. You know, Van Halen also has, which I really like, Little Guitars, parentheses, intro. Iron Maiden has the Ides of March, which, of course, we know the whole story about that, kind of a lift from the Samson / Thunderstick situation. And a very, very similar to that is Judas Priest in the Hellion. So those are your intros. And wanted to mention another amazing Black Sabbath instrumental that I've always loved, that they get a lot of abuse for it, right on the same album as Don't Start Too Late, Supers Are. Love that thing. And again, that's a cheat as well, with the ah-ah's voice as an instrument sort of thing. William Walker says easy category to fill. I think there are so many albums that have those useless 1 minute or less instrumentals that are asinine acoustic fingerprinting exercises, guitar sound effects. So you could tell he's basically doesn't have a lot of patience with these. Agent Steele, he mentions only John Roth, Electric Sun, Buckethead intro on Enter the Chicken, MAB intro, this CD is dedicated to you. Oh boy, speaking of that, those hilariously noise your CD is glitching, annoying things on typo negative CDs are hilarious instrumentals, right? Mentioned a bunch of Kiss Love Theme, Testament Beginning of the End, Triumph Fantasy Serenade, Raven 3940, Candlemas Dawn. If you're going to give me a 1-2 minute instrumental at all, give me Without Warning or From the Moon, or give me nothing at all. So there you go. Something else I wanted to just mention. Obviously, we're in a certain world here, but I found, okay, so at digitaldreamdoor.com, greatest instrumental artists. So this shows you that what I'm going to say here shows you that there's a whole nother world, of course, that we didn't talk about here. There are actual instrumental artists and many of those in the rock field. And many of those have created some of the most famous instrumentals of all time. You can think of them when I give you the names of these bands. They're going to come to mind. Booker T and the MGs, The Ventures, Duane Eddy, King Curtis, The Meters, Link Wray, Dick Dale, Jeff Beck. So yeah, in the 60s, you had that whole instrumental guitar field, right? And these things would be like soundtrack themes and TV themes. You'd get a lot of that, the movie instrumentals, and those things would turn out to be hits. They'd get to be hits. Jeff Beck, of course, Bill Doggett, Big J. McNeely, The Shadows, Joe Satriani, Yngwie Malmsteen, Willie Mitchell, Eric Johnson, Davy Allen and the Arrows, Bill Black's Combo, Ramsey Lewis Trio, The Marquise, Steve Vai. So, wow, tons and tons and tons of stuff here, right? Couple other honorable mentions. Mick Phelan mentions In the Thrash Field, Crystal Ann, Annihilator, Absolution, Megadeth, The Ultraviolence, Death Angel. In Sludgy Alternative Metal, he mentions Bullhead, Psalm, Baroness, Elephant Man, Mastodon, Dawn, Gojira, Songs of Thunder, High on Fire, Demon Cleaner, Caius. In the proggy world, he also mentions Porcupine Tree, Wedding Nails, The Dance of Eternity, Dream Theater, Death Metal, Redneck Stomp, Obituary, 1985, Carcass, The Jester's Dance, In Flames, Voice of the Soul, Death, The Beginning of the End, Deicide. So yeah, there's tons and tons and tons of instrumentals we could talk about here. But my bottom line here is I wanted to make the point is that I did find value in some of those intros. And Tony Iommi's the king of that, as far as I'm concerned. Van Halen does a pretty darn good job sometimes as well. And I do find a lot of value in those really mellow, moody, quiet instrumentals. I love Down Home, that Jerry Garcia Band one, and all of these Eno ones. Check out that Eno album. That's your homework for today. Check out that Eno album, Another Green World. Absolute masterpiece, 1975. Leading into that, I love that whole field of the Peter Gabriel, Robert Fripp, David Bowie instrumentals. And then if you want to go right to the edge, go to early King Crimson. There's lots and lots of instrumental music that you can listen to there. And I also wanted to make the point, bottom line, there are some great songs that are just highly entertaining that manage to do it without vocals, like your Switch 625 kind of thing. If you like the show, want to support future episodes, please go to Ko-fi, rhymeswithnofee.com/MartinPopoff. Hit that red support button and buy me a coffee or a pint. This week, I would like to thank Lee Clifford, Augustin Garcia de Paredes, and Steve Polari for my books. You can go to martinpopoff.com. There is some other stuff coming down the pipes. I'm working on some other books as well. We've got a great Blue Oyster Cult panel book coming shortly, which is much longer and I think better than the Cure one that came out, which is the first one, but we've got some other ones coming as well. I still have my Damned book. I still have my big swanky AC/DC David Bowie and Pink Floyd that came out not too long ago. So there you go. Finding value in instrumentals. Like I say, your homework for today. Go play. Check it out. See what you think of it. Let me know on the Facebook page if you liked it. Check out that Eno album, Another Green World. Bye for now.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at the RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at R&R Archaeology.